I'm father. I say I'm fathery, and this here is a text trek, but it is also drawn to trek.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 260th installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek, old and new, and tonight is also going to be the, what are we on now, the 16th, I believe, the 16th installment of Drawn to Trek. So, unfortunately, the host of Drawn to Trek, Aaron Harvey, is unable to be here. He's feeling a bit under the weather last minute and is unable to make it, so we hope he gets to feeling better soon. We were also going to have our friend Jesse Gender on the show tonight, and she's having some internet connectivity issues. But that's okay, we still have a fun show in store, because I have a lot to say about this episode. I had a pretty good time with it, and I know my live audience is already chatting away for those joining us live, so I'm going to be relying on y'all for someone to bounce off of my ideas and just kind of share some of your own opinions, and we can maybe read some more comments than typical. I do have my friend Sohel is on the way, that the Text Trek audience should be very well familiar with, Drawn to Trek people. Y'all should subscribe to Starfleet Sohel on YouTube. He's an awesome dude. Literally one of my favorite people in the world, and makes a lot of delightful content. Tonight we will be talking about Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 4, Something Borrowed, Something Green, written by Grace Parajani and directed by Bob Suarez. And before we get into the topic, into the meat of the subject of tonight's show, and discuss this episode, and, you know, get all into that Orion, the Orion lore that we have now. They put so much Orion-ness in this one little short half-hour episode. I can't wait to delve into that with y'all. But first thing first, I have to say thank you to the Text Trek Patreon supporters. I'll list y'all out in the credits at the end of the show. But it really means a lot to me when y'all are able to chip in a little bit each month and help us cover the expenses of doing a weekly live show. So to celebrate, we'll be watching something in the Patreon watch party on October 14th. We do one of those every month where we get together and watch Star Trek episodes. You can come into the Text Trek Patreon at whatever level you're able to help with, but as little as $2 a month will get you into the monthly watch parties. If you can afford to be more generous, there's other perks as well, but $2 a month, you can come to our watch parties. We just had a really fun one in September watching some animated series episodes for the 50th anniversary of the animated series. In October, I'd like to do something spooky, but I gotta check and make sure if there's a Bridge Crew patron birthday in that month, they'll get to pick. So I need to clear that, but I'm curious. Patrons, let me know, what are some of the good, like, scary episodes that might be fun ones to do? I know one year last year we did Thal, the scary clown episode of Voyager. I know a lot of people really dig that one. It's gotten, like, a lot more respect in recent years. I think, like, in the 90s, some people thought it was kind of, you know, silly and annoying and maybe campy, but it seems like a lot of people enjoy it now, so I like seeing it get a glow up like that. I can't remember last week. Did I bring up in, like, the news section of the show, did I mention that there is going to be a release of Star Trek Strange New World Season 2 on 4K Blu-ray disc in December? I can't remember if I mentioned that last week, but if I forgot, I need to mention it now, because I'm really excited about that. That's rare for TV shows to get a 4K physical media release. It's extremely rare. I was happy that they did that for Strange New World Season 1. It's the only Star Trek Blu-ray that I bought the steelbook version of. I normally buy the the cheap Blu-ray version, but I always buy these because I want them to keep putting out Star Trek on disc, especially with what happened with Prodigy. That could happen to any Star Trek show, you know? It's, if you want to have constant access to Star Trek, then the only way to ensure that is to make sure that you get physical copies of this stuff. And some TV shows don't get any physical media release. I know, I'm sorry if y'all have heard me get on this soapbox before. I know I'm preaching to the choir with some of y'all who also, if you're not buying the physical media, then like I know that you get like the digital copies that you buy either through Apple or Amazon or wherever. But yeah, like as long as we're buying the stuff, then they're going to have incentive to keep putting it out. So I'm happy to see that, and I encourage people to, you know, continue to support Strange New Worlds on physical media. And maybe they'll continue to keep putting it out there for us. I don't know. I don't think there's really like much else news to talk about, though, is there? I don't see anyone in the live audience bringing anything up. I do see some suggestions for Cat's Paw. So Joel, I see you asking for that. You know, Cat's Paw, it was designed to be a Halloween episode, but there's so many good episodes of the original series. Like, is that one that we really want to watch? I mean, like, it's not even like, it's not like bad in a way that's like, you know, laughably bad. Like, you know, it's not like you can kind of have fun making fun of it, or at least like, I don't really have like a ton of fun watching it, but I don't know. Other people might have different opinions. So maybe I just need to watch it with the right crowd, and my eyes will be open, and I'll come away with a new appreciation of Cat's Paw. So if that's all we got as far as news and the housekeeping and stuff go, then I guess I'll go ahead and start talking about Something Borrowed, Something Green. But I'll recap it for everyone just by reading the official synopsis, and then I'll kind of expand on that with spoilers to refresh it. But the official synopsis reads, Tindy is summoned back to Orion for a wedding. So pretty straightforward. But yeah, Tindy is called home. She's reluctant to go. She kind of doesn't want her friends to see that side of her personality, that side of her history, that side of her family, whatever. But T'Lyn and Mariner are really gung-ho to go, because as us fans have never got to visit Orion, it turns out not many people in the Star Trek universe have gotten to visit Orion. And yeah, it's people in the universe also don't know much about this race, even though they've been around since the first episode of Star Trek ever shot. So they do join her, and they end up having a good time, and they're actually supportive to Tindy, and she benefits from having them around, and they're good friends, and they find out that Tindy's sister had been kidnapped before the wedding, or so everyone thought. It's a typical Orion tradition. However, in this case, D'Erica, the sister, ran away on purpose because she didn't feel like she could live up to being the prime sister, the prime daughter, the daughter that was trained to be the Orion assassin badass. We find out that Tindy was trained to be this Orion assassin badass. She didn't want to do that. She wanted to go be a science nerd in Starfleet. She went to go be a science nerd in Starfleet. Little sister has imposter syndrome, feels like she can't live up to big sister. However, it turns out like, oh, Tindy left knowing that D'Erica would be even better at that assassin stuff than her. And hey, you actually are the big badass. And everyone's like, yeah, like you totally just like kicked the shit out of all of us. You're super cool. You're going to be awesome at this Orion assassin business. And she goes through with the wedding and continuing her life on Orion, living her dream of being the prime daughter. So, and now I see in the live audience, Jill47 is saying she votes for M'Pok Noor, which is kind of a scary episode. That's the one where Garak is going crazy on the other Cardassian station. It's not really like Halloween-y to me. Like, it's not like there's nothing. It doesn't have like a, I don't, I kind of want something like a little spookier, you know. But again, that's just me. Maybe other people would want that. So, but yeah, give me y'all's suggestions. Y'all should also give me your kind of general thoughts on this episode, because I'm gonna give y'all my opening statement, just kind of explain my broad feelings on this, and then we'll get into the specifics in a moment in the episode breakdown. But just my overall takeaway on this one, it was a ton of fun. It was delightful, and it was actually a pretty smart episode. But I have been asking for Orion stuff since, I guess it was 2019. They announced that there would be an Orion character on Star Trek Lower Decks. Yeah, it was like that summer when we got like that first image of some of the characters. And I thought, oh, that's so cool. Orions have been around for a long time. We don't know much about them. They were mostly ignored during Berman-era Star Trek, but they've started showing up again recently. So this is a great opportunity to have an Orion character. Let's go meet her family. I was thinking, like, oh, what if she has, like, a criminal family? Like, her dad could be, like, some mafia don or something. And I guess that wasn't too far away from what they ended up doing. But they kind of kept it, like, matriarchal, like, on Enterprise. So they're kind of, like, taking stuff from that had been mentioned in previous Trek, and they were able to kind of expand on it and kind of think about it, in some ways kind of clean things up and present things that seemed like a little iffy before, and kind of like make more sense of it now, recontextualize it. That's what Dave would say if he was here. That's a Dave term. But we got to see so much, and Tindy has just been a great character from the beginning of the show. She's been so much fun to watch and grow. And the more that we learn about her, the more that I just care about her. It's weird. Like, I remember thinking in season one, when she seemed like the naive new girl, the new girl at school. Because that was our point of view character arriving on the ship, and she's meeting all these characters for the first time as we're meeting them. And then just watching her kind of grow into her role as a medical officer, and then as a science officer, and saying in season three that she wants to be captain someday. And I remember like seeing like Veritas, where she goes on that Black Ops mission to Romulus, and she's able to, you know, beat the crap out of these Romulan soldiers and stuff. And I'm thinking, like, how the hell, like, this is so silly. And now I'm watching, I'm like, oh no, it actually like all like really makes sense. And now like I have totally new angles to appreciate Tindy on. So it's really, really fun if you're a fan of that character. And I also liked the B story. I know it was like really silly, but the Mark Twain, the twin Twains, that cracked me up. It was just so ridiculous and over the top. And I was like, oh my God, are they actually going to be like, hey, maybe if we did all just try to talk to one another and some foghorn leghorn type accent like this, and use a lot of terminology and what did Boimler call it? Something about homespun analogies or something along those lines. Maybe we'd all just learn to get along just a hair bit better. But no, that's actually ridiculous. And so I love like the failure of it. That seemed kind of realistic. Like, okay, if a couple of goofballs actually tried to execute that, how would it work out? And maybe it would work out like that. So it was a fun setup. You know, it was like that Lower Decks kind of like misdirect that like I don't see it coming. Whenever like I don't see it coming, I love it. It really cracked me up. I see Joel is saying Freeman as Twain is peak Twain. And Joanne Robertson is saying, it's so hilarious what folks think Southern sounds like. Yeah, Joanne, I know like you're in Tennessee, and I'm in Texas. I was just driving through the South not that long ago. I went to Mississippi, and I went through like Arkansas, Tennessee, and then like I came back through Louisiana. And yeah, it is weird, like other people. I don't know. I guess there's just like a lot of misconceptions about every part of the country, probably. I know one thing that I'll be personal with y'all and say something like, I don't think I've ever admitted to this on the show before, but the whole like Tex Trek branding, like sometimes I question like, was that even a good idea? And Dave came up with it actually. That was like Dave's idea. I was like, oh, but why don't we go with Tex Trek? And I was like, okay, yeah, like we're in Texas, it makes sense. And I kind of like, you know, Texan-y stuff. I like I wear like big belt buckles sometimes, and I like to cook chili in the winter. And I don't know, I cheer for the Texas Longhorns in college football. But it's like, okay, I'm also like, I'm not for a lot of other things that Texas is associated with, like, you know, like repressing women's access to reproductive rights and slavery, which I know there's like a lot of slave states, but I mean, it's like, you know, there's like a lot of like bad negative things. But it's actually something that like Noelle Wells said, who plays Tindy. So I feel like it's appropriate that I talk about this here now, this week of all weeks. But Noelle Wells, I guess, was saying how like a lot of people, I guess, like give her a hard time for being from Texas. She's from Victoria, Texas. But she said, like, you know what? Like at some point, like you just got to, just like how Tindy had to own her Orion-ness when they went to Deep Space Nine in season three, I guess Noelle Wells had learned like to own her Texasness. And she said like, sometimes she just did have to cowgirl up and just like accept that part of herself. And I don't know what the exact context to it was. It sounds like there's a whole story there. I'd love to hear. But yeah, so I guess I'm going to, you know, there's like good Orions, not all Orions are like you know, pillaging pirates. Some of them are actually, you know, science nerds like Tindy. So I guess not all Texans is what I'm trying to say. I don't know. But it seemed like if I'm ever going to bring that up, it would make sense to do it now. So there you go. But, Jill47, our live audience, saying it's not anyone's fault where they are born and raised. And yeah, that's true. I feel like a lot of people know that. But I feel like a lot of other people are just like, I don't know. It's just, I guess we all generalize probably way more than we should. And it's hard because we don't always realize when we're doing it. But let's go ahead and get into the episode breakdown. So we'll just start at the beginning of the episode. You know, we open with the Orion ship, and then we get the setup for the triple threat girls trip. But this Orion ship at the beginning, you know, we didn't have a teaser last week. They didn't give us a mysterious threat blowing someone up. So I almost wonder, was this supposed to be the teaser last week? And then they decided like, oh, we should just move the Orion scene to the actual Orion episode. And, you know, it'll connect better. Because Freeman mentions this later when she says, you know, there was an Orion ship that was destroyed. So I'm wondering, like, did they want that to be in episode 3? And then in episode 4, they'd have Freeman mention it. And then they're like, oh, people might forget or not know what she was talking about or something. So let's just move it to episode 4. Not sure what happened there. I see Joel in the live audience is saying Orion lower deckers have no love for TOS phasers. And Joel, that kind of made me sad, too, when Rissik, the Orion plagiarist, trying to copy other people's ideas. That line cracked me up. That made me laugh. Orion plagiarist. But when he tossed that TOS phaser into the trash barrel, at first that made me kind of like, oh, how are you going to disrespect the classic TOS phaser design? But then I thought, like, you know what? People do complain about member berries and Star Trek and fan service and stuff like that. And I've complained about that, too, at times, I must admit. So, honestly, it actually does make sense that a 24th century dude would look at a 120-year-old phaser and be like, yeah, that is trash. I don't want this. Bad loot. It goes in the trash barrel. Makes sense. But Rissik cracked me up. The two gals giving him a hard time cracked me up. Orion is very matriarchal. You know, there's more women than dudes on the ship. The captain and first officer are both women. So that was kind of a cool way to relend some of that stuff from Bound. And I guess, like, the advantage of there being so little Orion stuff on screen is that the writers of this episode did have a pretty large degree of freedom, I think, in developing the Orions that they wanted and doing a lot of their own world building. But for people who don't know, who hadn't watched Enterprise, they do kind of establish in that they're like, oh, Orion slave girls aren't really slaves. Their pheromones allow them to control the male population. And we see a bit more of that here, but it's kind of a bit more... it seems like a bit more like an actual functional society here. And Starfleet Sohel is letting us know his shuttle is docking, so he will be about soon. But yeah, this mysterious threat blows up the Orions, and I don't know. I'm still thinking these people are actually dying. They are being killed. The popular fan theory is that they're being transported, or they're being stored, or maybe they're like digitized or something, and we'll see these people again. And I won't rule that out. I'll say like that's possible. I kind of don't want that to be the case, but I don't know. Maybe if it was executed, I would get on board with it. I'll just have to wait and see. I don't mind not knowing. I kind of like having a slow burn mystery that's going to take a while to reveal itself. But yeah, just like these are like death shrieks when these people scream, and it looks like they're being blasted apart, and the whole ship gets torn apart. So I think they're being killed, and I'm going to feel like a little cheated if we're told, like, oh, no, they are just all, like, digitized and copied. Like, kind of like the Shax thing. Like, that was supposed to be a joke. If you're not going to play this up as a joke, then I don't know. I don't know if it'll work for me. Could be wrong, though. Just have to wait and see. But I don't think I have anything else on the Orion ship. So I'm just going to switch to the Cerritos, where we see some of our lower deckers. The gals are hanging out at work, Tindy and Mariner and Talen. They're done with their work. They got some free time, which is funny because Tindy just said, like, oh, yeah, we were just at shore leave last week, and I had to reprogram the biofilters in the transporter to filter out all the new diseases we brought on board or whatever, which is kind of interesting shore leave, I guess. But Freeman shows up, and I like this what up mom that Mariner gives her, like, because, like, we've never seen them have, I guess, kind of just like casual, honestly, like a bit more normal chill mother-daughter relationship. So great to see some growth there. And the other thing they've been doing with the two of them, where we're seeing them having similar reactions to things like, you know, boring Romulan spy stuff, or, you know, rolling up their sleeves when they're getting under the hood of a million-year-old computer and stuff like that. So I like seeing like the healthier side of the relationship, and I like seeing the show kind of remind us that they do have a lot in common. I'm wondering if there's gonna be like a mother-daughter episode where like the two of them, you know, team up for an adventure or something like this. I mean, like a mother-daughter girls trip, perhaps. I'd like to see it. We'll see if they're building to something with that. But she does mention here the Orion ship was destroyed, so Starfleet's trying to, you know, the Federation's trying to be a bit more, like, diplomatic to the Orion Syndicate. I guess it's the Syndicate? We don't really know, like, how the Orion government works, but Tindy says her family's the fifth largest house in the Syndicate, so that would indicate to me that the Syndicate's, like, the entire body of, like, the Orion government, which is probably more than just, like, their planet. But it's, like, also, like, a criminal organization that Quark tried to join in Deep Space Nine. But it sounds like whatever it is, there's probably, like, tension with the Federation, but, you know, they're trying to get along, so not quite, like, Cold War-level tension, but just, you know, we're just two countries that haven't always gotten along in the past, but we're trying to not have hostilities right now type of situation. I mean, there's clearly, you know, Orions who do come and join Starfleet, which you don't have to be a Federation member species to join Starfleet. We've seen plenty of you know, examples of that. But it's just, it's cool here to when Freeman mentions that, because it's like, oh, this mysterious threat that's blowing up ships, people are starting to notice these ships being destroyed. So, you know, someone noticed this Orion ship that got wiped out. I think we're getting close to, in the trailers, they showed, like, you know, at some point Ransom is like, oh, now they're targeting Federation ships. So, I don't know, them Bynars, at some point we're going to see, like, a couple of Bynars that were in the season 4 trailer get blowed up. And then, I don't know, Badgie, Peanut Hamper, whoever it is, whoever, Section 31, Transporter, Clone, Boimler. We'll find out at some point, but I'm curious. I kind of like having that, though, just, like, having the teaser dedicated every week to, like, that slow burn mysterious threat. I'd be curious what other people think about it, but I see in the live audience, Donna Marchese says, Sohel, watch out for the mysterious ship. Oh, no, don't say that about our dear sweet Sohel. What if his shuttle on his way, he's, you know, he's racing over here to get to the Starship Texas, and what if his shuttle is destroyed by the mysterious threat on the way? Donna, that makes me so sad to think about. How dare you even suggest that? But no, that's fun. Because it is such a rare, you know, treat to go to Orion, obviously, Mariner and T'Lyn, they're also excited. They want to go along, too. So we get this this fun callback to season 2, when Tindy and Mariner had the girls' trip to get the Cation mating post for Dr. T'Ana. I like, now that we have another lady on the show as part of the Lower Deckers with T'Lyn, it's like, oh, no, we get the triple threat girls' trip. So let's talk about Orion and the search for D'Erica. We get this really cool kind of Prodigy-esque, in my opinion, hashtag save Star Trek Prodigy, but this really cool sequence of the shuttle arriving at Orion. We had a cool shot of the planet with some space activity stations and ships, and you can see farm work, and there's some boy on a rhino creature working in the field, and Tindy's parents just ridiculously fancy estate. You know, whenever the Protostar would land on a planet in Star Trek Prodigy, they would always do these long ship landing sequences. It's also like a little Star Wars-y. It almost, like, you kind of want to hear like some John Williams music when you see this. And Chris Westlake's score is really good in this episode. Like, I thought it was actually really good here. I kind of like showed off Orion here, and it felt like, oh, here's like an event. We've arrived at Orion, the mysterious pirate planet. But in the opening, when the Orion ship encounters the mysterious threat, he did like some really cool, like, Chris Horner kind of, you know, like ship's tension type of, you know, Khan, the Reliant is firing, or, you know, Star Trek III when like the Bird of Prey cloaks. It's kind of like that type of vibe, that James Horner vibe. And later on in the fight sequence, in the sword fight, I thought it got like very like TOS kind of Mach Time type of da-na-na-na-na type of vibe to it. So that was also fun to hear. The swashbuckling dudes that you think are going to, I don't know, be piratey, like try to ask them for their riches or whatever, but they're, I guess, Tindy's family's servants, and she seems like kind of embarrassed by her wealth, which I suppose like would be awkward, you know, if your friends hadn't been, if you hadn't brought up the stuff before, they'd probably be like, oh, how come you never mentioned this to us? And the line from Mariner about like, I come from a post-scarcity world, and even I think this is incredible, that kind of stood out to me as like a little weird. I'm heaping a ton of praise on this episode, but here's something I can knock off some points for, is I just feel like wouldn't pretty much like anyone in the Federation be like post-scarcity? And I know like Earth is supposed to be like especially good in the future, but it just like, yeah, like post-scarcity doesn't mean like everyone, you know, is like carried around by servants and stuff. That just seemed like a little strange, but we meet her parents, the warrior queen Shona, very elaborate name, and her husband Bert, which is basically like, oh, let's make Bert sound like a Star Trek alien. So Bert reminded me a bit of what's his name, Savet in Strange New Worlds, T'Pril's husband, or T'Pring's dad, I guess I should say. But it's just kind of like the Vulcan version of Steve. So here we get Bert, the Orion version of Bert. Bert seems like a chill dude. Again, Orion matriarchy on full display. The warrior queen Shona, clearly the one in charge and in the marriage. This is where they first mentioned, I guess, the concept of the prime daughter and Tindy being the prime. I thought it was cool that, like, T'Lyn, when Mariner's like, oh, I don't know what that is, but it sounds cool. And T'Lyn's like, I don't either, but I concur. It's like, oh, T'Lyn thinks being the prime daughter sounds cool. I like that T'Lyn's still able to have like so much personality, but they keep her being Vulcan. But yeah, like she still, you know, she still thinks things are cool. Like she still liked, you know, being carried around by the hunk that sweeps her off her feet when they pick up her and Mariner and load them on the sedan. But we set up kind of the quest to find the Erica and get the concept across to the audience that the bridal kidnappings are an Orion tradition for weddings. And it can be like a little, you know, kind of showy or gaudy. And Joel's pointing out how huge the gate was. I see Starfleet Sohel is here. So Starfleet Sohel, if you'd like to come on in and say hi to everyone.
What an amazing privilege it is to be on your show today, Father. Thank you for having
what,
me.
Hold your horses. I say, what is this we have here? Do we have twin twains?
We are twin twins, and we're going to solve
On Text Trek / Drawn to Trek, it is a twin twain twin podcast.
Computer, begin program. I don't know. Hey, Father, sorry, I rushed over here. This like weird craft almost, this came out of nowhere, and it was like shining a white light. And then
we were worried.
Yeah, and then I remembered.
We were worried about you.
The boosters I installed, and I just hit those things and like didn't even think about it, and it's scary. I don't know.
Oh, it's like, did you go plaid like in Spaceballs?
I did.
Damn.
I was listening to y'all, so I'm pretty caught up. Yesterday I gave my opening thoughts, and you know, just listening to you talk about this episode, this is also one of my favorite episodes, so I'm excited that I got to hop on with enough time to really get into it, and we're doing the scene-by-scene stuff, so yeah.
Jill in our live audience is saying that she wanted to see T'Lyn and the Chalnoth guy, and that was the alien captain who eats a tree, but she wanted to see them go on a shuttle trip somewhere, but only if she enters notes about him in her pad. I, too, would like to see that, Jill. I think that'd be fun to see.
That would be fun.
So, Hel, what do you think about, I guess, the when we get the Orion mission to go find Erica, and the first stop is the club Slitthroat. Mariner really liked the name because it shows strength, and Tindy gets them in, and we get, you know, people are making out, dancing, drinking, throwing knives at Mariner. What do you think of this?
I loved all of this stuff. I love the gags. I agree with you that about earlier, just being on Orion and like the amount of lore we got about Orion. This reminds me a lot about Miami. This like space Miami in a way, which arguably is like a pirate's, you know, like a pirate's island, or, you know, a pirate city, if you will. Definitely the Caribbean's close by, so we, you know, we have that history around here and stuff like that. But yeah, this club is just like, if you come to Miami and you go to any club in Miami, it's kind of like this vibe over here. This club, not just any club, you know, there's like sexier clubs and then there's less sexier clubs. This is a more sexy club.
Interesting. What about the Miami Hump Dungeons?
I don't know of any Miami Hump Dungeons, but Mariners said
surely
that there
are. We have Hump Dungeons in Austin, Texas. I know that there's some in Miami.
I've never looked up a Hump Dungeon, but I happen to know, I thought it was funny that Mariner says like on New Seattle, because when I lived in Seattle, I did know there were Hump Dungeons there. And like I remember there's one famous one called like something like Steamworks or something like that. So yeah, that's pretty funny. But yeah, I love this death game that they were playing here.
The murder bug drinking game. Yeah. Well, what was cool about that is, I mean, these Titmouse animators constantly impress me. Just like, it's all visual. Like, you see this game and you know immediately how it works. It's like, oh, you drink the shots, put the shot glasses in the little thing, so the force field comes up, so the murder bug doesn't sting your hand. But it's like it doesn't have to be explained to you. It's just all conveyed when you see it.
Yeah, it makes 100% sense. The bug is really cool looking.
Yeah, it looks
so
cool.
Frustrated.
It looked alien.
He's so frustrated. Like, poor thing. He wanted to murder someone so bad.
My frustration with this episode, which I overall loved, but my biggest complaint would probably be that a lot of the Orion stuff I felt was like a bit too human. Like all the wedding stuff, it was like, oh, it looks like exactly like a wedding I would go to with like a cake, and you know, one of the participants is like walked down the aisle, and just it was like very, very, very not just like human looking, but also like, oh, like weddings and like, you know, mainstream Western culture of the last 100 years or whatever, like that specific human looking wedding. But yeah, like stuff like this, it was like, oh, that is like, it's very alien, but it's also like very approachable and easy to understand and what I would expect of the Orions.
We didn't get to see much of the wedding part of it, which I'm okay with, because I mean, it looked like it was going to be like pretty similar to like, you know, all the galactic weddings, which all seem a little similar except for Betazoid weddings maybe, but
but which is basically just a normal wedding, but you take your clothes off, something. It has I guess like the gender role reversal is something, but it's not much.
Right
You know,
I'm glad, because like you said earlier, we just got so much of the Orion landscape and so much more than we've ever learned in the history, in the 50 plus years, you know, of Star Trek. We got him in Enterprise, but I like the way the Orion, I want more Orions in Star Trek. And thinking about it last night, I was like, well, you know what? That's
we get
like
a lot of them.
We get a lot of them now. It's really cool. We have Orions in the 32nd century. We have Orions everywhere. So yeah, it's good that we're shifting the focus maybe a little bit and getting to learn more about some of the cameo species, you know, of the past.
It's funny that like Rick Berman was so anti-Orion and anti-Andorian. And then he finally like let them back in Enterprise. And the Tellarites too, and the Tellarites came in too. But then like since he like allowed them back in, we've gotten so much, like there's been so many Orions and Andorians and Tellarites, and they just like show up all the time now. I have to say thank you to the very generous $10 super chat we just got in our live audience from Joanne. Thank you so much, Joanne. She says dilithium money for Sohail's shuttle. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
He's the emergency streaming hologram. So
I think I've used that gag before. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I stole it from you. But we also see Tindy's, I guess, friend from high school, we learn, Madame G, who I guess is in charge of Slitthroat. And it, you know, she has like a little bit of intel, but not really anything useful. Like all she says is Niall still loves D'Erica. And so Tindy's like, oh, this actually might be something serious, because that guy was, you know, really, I guess her sister's ex still really into her. So, but that's all she says. That's all Madame G like never says, like, oh, like it was him, or I know where he took her. Like all she said was like, he still is like it's Tindy. It sounds like you already knew that. So,
but she hadn't thought of Niall before this. And
yeah,
so I think it is a good lead. It ended up being a good lead, because she's like, oh, of course. Going back to that previous shot, Fathery, look at how many Orions we have. Like, look at that. Like there's so many Orions.
And the hair color.
And the
you
hair
know what I was thinking?
And the hairstyles. Yeah.
Because most Orions always had dark hair, and then we had the one in 09, had red hair. And,
right.
But we had never seen an Orion with green hair until Tindy. And I remember our friend Sean Trek on the Tube saying, you know, in the first episode of Lower Decks, he had concerns when it showed the hologram program of Orion. And they all had green hair like Tindy. And I said, like, oh, that's just that part of Orion. You know, there's certain continents I can go to here where everyone is going to have the same hair color.
Yeah. And maybe green has some kind of like significance to Orion's, you know,
it means you're from the fifth wealthiest house.
Or, you know, or just like a certain, you know, like strain of, you know, like how the similar how we fetishize blondes, brunettes, blah, blah, blah. You know, like maybe green's the most coveted hair color as far as attractiveness is going, you know, on Orion. So Tendi's got everything going for her, which kind of like adds to, you know, like adds to the whole like her background and her past and everything like that. I also loved the mistress's line of let's do lunch, and then Tendi's like, no, I'm never gonna
no way I'm calling her. Yeah,
it's like really funny.
Yeah, but I guess the point I was trying to make is like, now we get like a big diversity of like, you know, hair color and like even like the skin colors, like different shades of green. Did you ever watch Space Ghost or Space Ghost Coast to Coast on Cartoon
I'm very
Network?
Familiar with it. I'd never watched it like I watched it randomly is what I'm trying to say.
That dude Zorak, the cricket man on the show.
Yes.
He would change color. Like sometimes he was green, sometimes he was more olive, sometimes he'd be kind of turquoise looking. I feel like these Orions, there's like a every shade of Zorak is you know covered by an Orion.
Yeah, I agree.
But again,
with that.
You know, species diversity.
Yep, totally.
Did you ever see the anime movie Akira?
I love Akira, the famous movie
from the 80s. There's like a sequence in that movie when like the general and the scientist go underground and they're on like this little like elevator lift thing that travels like a 45 degree angle down. And I see that design show up in other stuff all the time, but I think it always like goes back to Akira. But I think I saw it in Batman the Animated Series recently when I was rewatching that show, and it shows up in the Halo video games, but it looked like the thing they took to get to the hump dungeon.
You're 100% but you're 100% right, that does look like all those I'm familiar with what you're talking about. That's pretty funny.
What do you think of the moanheads in the hump dungeon, where they, I guess these Orion women make men get high on their hormones and dance around for them in cages?
This is one of the things that like Lower Decks does so well. Like they're able to like, you know, kind of shine a light on kind of the darker side of things, but keeping it like light in a way, like humorous and stuff like that, you know? And so this is like interesting. Like this is the part of, I think this is kind of getting into the part of Orion society that Tendi is most in at odds with. You know, like she even says to the madam, what's her name again? Ursula. De Ursula is what I call her because she reminds me of Ursula from The Little Mermaid. But she's even like, none of this nonsense sex stuff or whatever. And she's
Ingrida was her.
Ingrida, that's right.
Is the name. But yeah, I also like, I'm someone like, I haven't watched the Little Mermaid in 30 years or close to 30 years. Like I haven't seen it since it was like a fairly new VHS release from Disney. But even I was like, oh, that is Ursula from The Little Mermaid when I saw right. this.
There's the implication here. I don't know how you read it, but the madam seems to capture these people. They didn't mind so much because they were like, oh, we got caught up in another, you know, moan.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever,
when they're like,
you know,
oh, another like, hump dungeon.
Yeah. Hump yeah. Dungeon I mean, whatever. Yeah.
It's you know, like... you go out one night on Orion. You're an Orion dude. You're drinking. Someone's passing around that stuff that Clint Howard got Tilly high on in disco. That's and then the right. next thing you know, it's like it's 2 days later and you're in the middle of a hump dungeon.
Or like 7 days or who knows how long like Niall's been there, you know, it's like, but maybe it's keeping him out of trouble because he's also a stalker. He confesses to, like,
well, Tindy says he's a good guy, but I don't, who are we to judge this culture? You know,
it's
like,
true,
like,
I agree.
Like Ingrida tells Talyn, like, who are you, Vulcan, to judge me? They always point out how all of the men they're so good looking. All the men are these beautiful hunks. They never comment. I think they're trying to course correct for just decades of like, oh, those sexy green gals in Star Trek. I guess they're just trying to like course correct on that.
And let me just say, as far as for me personally, this course correction is quite nice.
I'm sure that I hadn't thought of that, Sohel, but yeah, I'm sure you've enjoyed the course correction.
They're wearing harnesses, which I have a personal fascination with them.
You had mentioned that also. I had not thought of that either.
And I the Kirk harness, there's one that's kind of similar to the Kirk harness.
There's a few harnesses in Star Trek. Like, I never noticed it until you started pointing it out, and I was like, oh, this does happen a lot. More so than anything else I watch.
Niall's got like a thing for a chain.
Yeah, they all have kind of like that like slave collar on, and I don't know, Niall's man bun was like, I thought that was like an interesting choice, but that's what
they should do. That was like they do like cabaret, or maybe I feel like there's like not cabaret, yeah, cabaret, or like what's the burlesque performances here, because that one scene, the madam and all her boys behind her, and she's on a swing and stuff like that.
It looked very staged. Like she rehearses that entrance.
Yeah, it's true. It looked like a burlesque thing. I love that Tendi came prepared with this.
Oh yeah, she used her science nerdness. Yeah, she used her science officer capabilities. But didn't they come up with a compound like this in Enterprise? Have a solution?
I can't remember.
In Bound, how did they stop the Orions?
My memory's foggy on this one.
I know it was like
Maybe the audience can tell us.
Trip loved T'Pol so much. They had such like a strong. They had a strong like bond, mental bond, that like he didn't succumb to the Orion pheromones.
That's right. But also, it's interesting that these are the folks that Tendi kind of grew up with. So we're kind of meeting mm-hmm. Tendi's friends and family. Even Niall, like she's familiar with them in a way. And the episode really conveyed that. Like I really felt like T'Lyn and Mariner, like I really felt like very fascinated by everything and like. You know, like a lot of questions here and there. It's like, what's going on? What does this mean? You know, like, let's pull on this thread, see where it goes. So yeah, I hope we see the Orion homeworld in live action, because I'm a sucker like seeing it, in that way as well.
And you know what I would just love to see is, you know how in the other Star franchise, especially right now, they're taking a lot of things like characters, places, concepts that were introduced in their animated shows, and they're now crossing them over into live action productions. I'd love to see Star Trek do the same thing and give us some of the Lower Decks and Prodigy stuff that's being created now. Let future Star Trek use that stuff in live action.
You can see Mike McMahon bringing the show into live action at some point.
They've already had, the show cross into live action before.
Right, as we've seen.
But I want that to be a more casual type of occurrence, where just like any show could like use just have like a California. There's no reason why Picard season 3 couldn't have like a California class starship, zipping around in the background.
Yeah. At least at least at the Fleet Museum, there could have been one that's just like. There as an example.
There should have been a Parliament class, like the Vancouver. There should have been a Parliament class there, and there should have been one of the Disco season 1 ships. Pick one. I don't know, the
Shenzhou, Nimitz, I think.
Walker class, whatever. Pick one of those.
Yeah, I agree. But it's okay. I mean, like, we still have a lot of other live action Star Treks. Like, how cool would it be to see? I think the potential is there to see Orion. Maybe in Discovery in season 5,
we've seen a lot of Orions in Discovery, so a very likely place to see more.
Or if we don't see it in Discovery, when the Academy show airs, many years from now, because of the situation in Hollywood. But when the Academy show airs, there's definitely a possibility, I think, to see the 32nd century Orion, which actually would be awesome, because now we have like a template of Orion now and then later. It seems a little bleak though with the Emerald Chain when they were in charge. Yeah. So but now we're post Emerald Chain, so we could see a Orion Spring, if you will.
my issue with Discovery season 5 is that like I like Discovery, but like I don't care about the 32nd century as much as I do like the 23rd or 24th or 25th now. Mm-hmm. Same thing like when I watch Voyager and there's like all this cool stuff in the Delta Quadrant, but I'm like, well, that's over there. That's not like here where the, you know, the rest of everything is. And that's kind of how I feel about like Discovery when it's like so far in the future. So it's like whatever they do with Orion there won't really be relevant to the rest of the universe. But I would still, even that being said, I would still like to see whatever that future version is. I would expect it to be radically different from this. I don't know what it would change into, but if, you know, that many centuries, it would change into something.
Yeah, totally. Jill in the audience says that the Discovery Orions didn't have good makeup, in my opinion. They look better in Strange New Worlds. I agree, but yeah. Like that's because just the benefit of they had time to like perfect it.
Well, that's probably what they're going to look like in Discovery season five.
Yeah, exactly. They'll look more like the Strange. It's all every show like, you know, improves the other show. I kind of love that too about. You know,
yeah, it's like they fixed the I say quote unquote they fixed the Klingon makeup for Worf and Picard, and then Strange New Worlds was like, oh, now our Klingons can look like that, not Discovery.
Look how good that background is.
Yeah, so we learn from Nail that like she's just hanging out in the ship graveyard. So the girls go to the ship graveyard where I guess Tindy and D'Erica hung out as children, and there they see their kind of childhood hangout, and Tindy explains that she had like all these dreams of wanting to grow up and be in Starfleet.
Look how cute and she that even is. Like
yeah, she graffitis on the wall, and we see like I guess like she drew like a little crayon drawing of her in Starfleet, and then there's a drawing of D'Erica like with a sword, like basically like being the prime daughter, being the badass Orion assassin lady.
This is such a touching drawing because look how happy and free Tindy looks. And it's interesting that she painted herself red. I wonder what that means, but
because she wants to be a captain.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. That's right. She's Captain Tindy right there. That's so cool. Oh, I love
it. That's her dream.
Oh, I love it. I just got so happy right now.
She'll get there eventually. What did you think, Sohel, when D'Erica showed up and delivered the third stabbing to Mariner? So two questions. A, what did you think of Mariner? You know, what are the odds consistently being stabbed in the same spot? And then what did you think of D'Erica's entrance?
So I don't think the odds are very good that would happen in real life, but I think in Star Trek, that's okay. We could probably figure out an algorithm to explain the odds. Oh, we can just go into the holodeck dressed up as Mark Twain to figure out who's right about this. No, I thought that gag was hilarious. I think some folks thought it went a little too far.
It kind of skirts the line, but I laugh at it too. And it's just like this Mariner's reaction, like, oh my God, what are the odds? Are you just like, yes, that is how Beckett Mariner would react in this situation. So I don't know. I gotta get like, on board really? With it. I'm sorry.
And she is kind of like, what's funny about it is that she's like, really? Again? She's so frustrated.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah. Yeah. What about D'Erica?
D'Erica's really cool and a total badass, as they pointed out. She's like, look at that sword, father. Don't you want a replica of that sword?
Like the sword that she has? Yes, because it looks so unlike anything we've seen in Star Trek, but in like a good way. It felt very... I don't know. It's kind of it's modern. It's different. It's but it's just there's a freshness to it. To me, like it kind of seems more like something you would see in a video game or an anime. You know, it's like
exactly.
It's like Final Fantasy or something like that. But I don't know. I like that it incorporated well. And
I appreciated this so much because, you know, I have a younger sibling and I kind of as an older sibling. This whole dynamic and this conclusion to their, like, you know, kind of this, I guess, beef that they've had or she's had, like, you know, it makes so much sense because, like, I like just to kind of relate it in a personal manner. But like, but I think it's very relatable overall. It's like sometimes the older sibling is just like, oh, I'm going to go off and do this or whatever. Right. And we don't really ask our younger siblings, like, is that OK with you? Or like, you know, how do you feel about it? And like, even though that's what they might want, it's like nice to check in. Right. And so I'm the prime. That's right.
Joel in the live audience is saying Starfleet Sohel is the prime. I think my sister is the prime out of
in your family.
Us, but,
yeah. So it made me think, and I actually went heart to heart with my sister because I was like, when I moved to Seattle, I never even asked her if that was okay or whatever. And so it was like a really I just said I'm doing this, and she was like supportive and everything at the time, but I never checked in. And so this was very touching to me. I actually got like super, you know, emotional about it. But in the case of their relationship here, I just love that, like, yeah, Erica's like, yeah, of course I wanted to be prime. It's just that you assumed, you know, like, it's like you just kind of like assumed that it was going to be the case, and you didn't even like, and you haven't even been back, she says. Like, all of her things that she's mad about are just loving things, like, you know, like things that like she loves her sister and she wants more, you know, like. So I thought that was very sweet. And I like that now Tendi kind of realizes that they don't mind at all that she's in Starfleet. Maybe the parents are a little bit more, you know, about it, but like her generation, like her you know, kind of circles, like, all for it. But where they're miffed is that, like, oh yeah, you went off and joined Starfleet, it seems like we all supported you in this, and then you just don't even call, like, you're gone, you know what I mean, like having all these adventures and not sharing. So I love that little moment here where they reconnected, and like, and now De'Erica feels like the prime. Like, she feels like she can be the prime. You know, she's got this off her chest.
Joel in the live audience is also saying, Jussie isn't here. For anyone who didn't hear earlier, we hope to have Jussie Gender on as a guest, but she was unable to attend due to some technical reasons. Jussie, I don't know if you watched this at some point, but I did get your message, and I saw that. So
also, by the way, that video is amazing. Everyone should go check it out. I saw it. It was very cool. The one Joel's mentioning.
In Jussie's review video for this episode, she said that Tendi was assigned assassin at birth. Jussie said that this was kind of similar to her experience as a transgender person, which, that's not kind of my story to tell. I don't want to speak for that community, but I understand how, oh, yes, like, I can definitely see why Tendi would be a great analog for that. And also just myself as someone who does not have that experience, it kind of puts it in a way where I can lens it and kind of, you know, help understand. And something else that Jussie says, like, it's actually kind of experience that a lot of us should be able to relate to, because most of us probably at some point we do feel like, you know, the system is forcing us to conform to in some way, you know, to go against like our nature, and we shouldn't just, you know, betray ourselves to put our trust in the system and just plug in and force ourselves to comply and be whatever the system tells us to be. And that's for sure is a message at the heart of the story.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm not trans either, but I have been following Jussie for like such a long time that I really feel, mm-hmm. you know, I really feel like I understand a lot more than I did like 5 years ago before I discovered.
I've learned so much from her. And I know it's hard. She puts like a lot of
and she gets so, you know,
into it. And
I've been, you know, dealing with a lot personally, but whenever I get a chance, like, I try to go and like, you know, support her with like something to make her feel good, or like give her like something to, cause she gets so much, you know, hate and like stuff like that from all these awful trolls and stuff. So, you know, but she's amazing. And I don't know how she does it, but like when you're talking to Jussie Gender, it's like you're the only person in the world, and she knows you and loves you. Like, it's so cool. And she does, though. She's so genuine. I love her. I don't know how we got on. Oh, yeah. I'm like, sorry, Jussie, for embarrassing you by talking about you.
Yeah, everyone, make sure that you're subscribed to her channel, because her content is great. But there's also a bit of imposter syndrome. I was saying in my opening statement before you got here, but with Erica, like, thinking like, oh, I'm really good at this, but there's no way I could be as good as Devani. And it, you know, it's kind of like she never understood her skill level, because like she kept comparing herself to, like, you know, however good I am, I'm still not going to be as good as her. And then it's like, it's only like after, like, oh, I did just kind of kick your ass in the sword fight, that like, I guess I am cut out to be the prime. And it was fun to see her kind of accept that role. And then Tendi's science nerd nature is what saves the day at the end, when she knew how to hotwire the ship. And Tilin went along with it, even though she's like, when Tendi is like, who wants to hotwire a ship? And then Tilin's like, not me. And then Mariner's like, ah, oh, come on, don't be like that. But I like Mariner doesn't like push back against T'Len's kind of Vulcan prudishness. Like Mariner is like, oh, come on, you can have fun with it. Like Mariner, I like seeing like the Mariner T'Len interaction. So if we hadn't gotten, we've had T'Len and Tindy, T'Len and Boimler, but we hadn't gotten like T'Len and Mariner. But they get along better than I would have thought, and I like that. What do you think of that?
Same thing. I think I've said this before, but T'Len's like my favorite newest character. Yeah. Like she's so amazing.
She adds such another way of keeping the show fresh, you know, adding a new character.
It's kind of like a tradition in Star Trek that a new character comes along like kind of later in the seasons, you know what I mean? Like
Worf and Seven of Nine were both season 4 entries.
Right. So I think that's pretty cool that they're doing that and they brought in T'Len. I hope she's here to stay. Ensign Ro came in, right? Like wasn't she like a new, right? Not Ensign Ro. Yeah, she was Ensign at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And but she's not like not quite like T'Len. How long did Ro didn't have a whole season, did she?
No, Ro was never in like
she was like
every
in five
episode
or,
of a
yeah,
season.
Yeah, she was like in she's... like a handful. She feels like she's there a lot more just cuz you get a lot about the character. There's a lot of when she is there, they do spend it's almost like she's the feature of the episode. And that's kind of like how I see T'Len, but I just love her so much. I describe her as my husband because she is. She's like my Star Trek husband, my ultimate Star Trek husband, probably. she might replace Garavik, sorry. But her T'Lenisms are just to die for. I love all of them. I love what she said. Well, we'll get to that part, but I love like here on this part of the story when she's like, you know, Tendi has an unexpected gravitas for someone so excitable. Just things like her little lines are just her little jabs are just so funny. And
when she throws
great.
The report out,
I cried.
But you know why I love that moment so much is because it's not like. Because it would be the most obvious thing in the world to be like, here is this Vulcan, and she's got a stick up her ass, like T'Pol on Enterprise. But she's going to be on the Cerritos, and these silly lower deckers are going to melt her cold heart, and they're going to win her over, and she's going to get on board with them. And I'm sure we're going to get a degree of that. But what I love about this is, like, she doesn't betray herself. She doesn't betray her Vulcanness. Or her interpretation of how to be a Vulcan, which didn't seem to jive in total alignment with what the people on her Vulcan ship wanted. But she's still a very Vulcan person. And her throwing out that report, it wasn't because like, oh, I'm going to betray like my Vulcan desire to, you know, be scientific and explore and get information. And also she wants to be like a good little Vulcan and get in good graces with the Vulcan High Command and get back on a Vulcan ship. That was her whole motivation for going on this trip and everything. But when she throws out the report here, she gives a Vulcan reason for it by falling back on ethics. And Vulcans are supposed to be these really ethical people. And she's like, yeah, like turning in that report without your consent would be unethical. So it's like, I love that. Because it's like, it was touching, but it was like T'Len was able to do like the friendship thing to Tindy, but without betraying who she is. So it stays in line with the larger theme of the story.
Of be who you are and stuff like, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, I love that. Is that we'll talk about it, I'm sure, in the Gornix, but is that the ship from Voyager?
It is.
Oh, cool. That's kind of cool, too, then.
The exterior and the interior are both recognizable.
Yeah.
But we do get D'Erica back to the altar just in the nick of time for the wedding. And it kind of cracked me up, too, when the mom, Shona, the warrior queen, when she's crying, she's in tears, and she's like, oh, look at my special little girls, like accomplices.
Yeah, it's very cool. I love the officiant and how they're dressed in like this armor kind of gilded like dress uniform
type. The designs at the wedding, they're the wardrobe is cool. It's kind of a shame we don't see it on screen longer, but I guess that's what you know, the freeze frame pictures on Trek Corps are for. Shall we transition over to the B story with Boimler and Rutherford?
One last thing I just want to say is I really appreciated that like the roles were reversed kind of from what we're used to, and that they referred to him as like a radiant, I want to be called radiant and pretty sometimes too. I think that's good.
if I am at your wedding, I'll say like, doesn't he look so radiant or whatever Mariner says, like I'll say that like verbatim, whatever it is.
I will appreciate it so much, Father.
Say it super loud so that you can hear it. But let's talk about the B story. So we have the roommates, Rutherford and Boimler. They're like best friends that live together, and it starts off great, but then they start having fights, like who gets to water the bonsai tree. What do you think of this?
I've been waiting for this. I feel like Brotherford is my jam. I think they are this is, I feel like, how you and I or any one of the combination of like me, you, or Sean, or whoever. I feel like this is kind of like,
yeah, what would we wouldn't fight over watering the bonsai tree, but we'd fight over, I don't know, something
stupid
like
continue. Well, me with the 3D canon, isn't it the 3D canon that you get, what is it, whatever number of things, you know, like that we have differences on, you know, with Star Trek. But then at the end of the day, we always come back together and we're, you know, we're all good friends and everything like that. But I've never had a roommate or a housemate.
I like living with friends. When I've had like roommates I was good friends with, it actually like worked out pretty well. For I don't know, some people say like don't live with your friends, but I kind of liked it. But I like living alone, I guess.
I think it's case by case. There are some friends that I can think of that I would want to totally live with, you know, like, and there's other friends that I'm like, maybe not, you know.
But I never lived alone until I was like 29, I think. Like, it was
you got me beat, because I didn't live alone until I was like in my late 30s, so yeah. Yeah, that's cool, and I loved it by the way. I love living alone. I did need a companion after a while, so I got a cat, which is Arthur, and that's how Arthur came into my life.
I technically don't live alone because I have Amos with me.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, so yeah, but yes, this Brotherford thing is something that, you know, I didn't quite like ever like know how, like, you know, Jill points out people are shipping them, but I'm holding out for Tenderford.
Yeah, I'm a Tenderford shipper, but I never felt like there was any romantic sparks between the two of them. I don't think that was the intention,
but there are like fun things that they put in that like are gonna get people to like it's gonna create like a discourse, I guess, because like, you know, there's just a lot, like the linen, like what was it, the like Boimler's sexuality, I think, is like still up in the air. I think I think he's like pan or bi, like somewhere around there, you know, like somewhere in that area. Rutherford seems more, you know, like, you know, maybe more interested in Tendi, you know, in a romantic way, because he definitely is sweeter, I think, to her than he talks to, like, the way he talks to Boimler is not the same sweetness, if you get what I'm saying, is like a romantic sweetness. It's like, it's more of like a friendship sweetness. But Boimler, I don't know. Boimler's like, you know, Boimler might actually develop a crush on Rutherford, and that would be an interesting thing, is that like,
then you'd have a love triangle. So no, you know, but writers like, love that.
I think they would resolve it very quickly in, yeah, exactly. But I think they would also resolve it very quickly and humorously in Lower Decks. But I could see that happening. I could see like Rutherford being like, I don't feel that way about you, bestie, but I love you so much, and you know, like, or whatever, you know, and have like that kind of situation or whatever. But personally, I wouldn't mind a ship of Brotherford as far as a romantic thing. I think they could be really cute boyfriends. I just don't think that's where the show. I just don't think that's the indication that the show is doing.
Would they continue to do like matching cosplay in the holodeck?
I think this should be a continuing gag, like where they say they're going to
dress up as like eccentric historical figures,
exactly,
that are fun to talk like.
And Father, I propose right here, right now, on this episode, that at some point when we are at a convention together, that we are also cosplaying as the same character.
Yeah, we could do a. I don't know. I feel like we have kind of like two very different looks, so it'd be hard to. I mean, I don't know. Accuracy is not everything in cosplay.
Just depends where the. Yeah, that's true. But it just depends on like. I think we could both do versions of our favorite captains. Like I think, you know, you love Captain.
We've talked about the Kirk and Spock one,
or Kirk and Picard. We talked about Kirk and Picard. I could easily do Picard because I'm already
that's
bald.
What I meant. Kirk and Picard, yeah.
But maybe we could do two Kirks and two Picards just to see what, and it, again, it doesn't have to be accurate or whatever. It's like, you know, obviously, but you know. But yeah, I love this gag so much. Mark Twain in TNG was one of the funnest things about the Times Arrow. It could have gone really wrong, but I feel like they really pulled it off. And I feel like he's like a character that him and Da Vinci are like characters that we like. Like, it's so weird to think about that, but like, they're characters, right?
It was fun when they're like, they have all these hostilities and everything, and we don't know like at what point they got resolved. It was just like, we just cut back from a commercial break and all of a sudden like they're getting along because they talk to each other like Mark Twain. I just love like the silliness of it.
It's because Mark Twain spoke in aphorisms, and so aphorisms tend to like you know, like the what did he say?
Aphorism. That's the word I couldn't aphorism. Think of earlier.
And he's like, or wrote an aphorism. He probably spoke him. He could just throw him out like easily. But like the one here where he's like, when they find, I'm but a crumb on the biscuit of your intellect or something. I forget what he says. But it's like,
yeah, it's like my wit is but a crumb upon your cracker or something. Yeah, something like that.
Upon the biscuit of your wit or something. But yeah, that's what it was. The biscuit of your wit. It's like so funny.
It's like if you give compliments to each other like that, then you just start getting along. It clearly worked for them. It's what their friendship needed. It is not what Captain Freeman's negotiations needed, as we see when the alien captain Kokor is. You know, he wants the credit for scanning this nebula. He wants it to be him. He wants to go back to his people and be like, look, I got the scans. This ain't no Federation scan that's like way too nuanced and thorough with all this that extra funny, information that we don't need.
like what?
But it's a very, I guess, like Starfleet thing. I guess like not really like poking fun at Star Trek for being like, oh, kind of like the nerdy, like it's like a cozy future where like the conflict or like people arguing over scanning a nebula. But it's like that. There's a funness to it. A lot of the fans, I think, find a comfort in that. So
I enjoyed seeing Captain Freeman like standing her ground, kind of, and he was like, you know, well, he basically said like, oh, are you willing to die for this, like to scan this nebula? And she's like, well, she's contemplating. she's like considering.
Yeah, she paused before she answered, so she had to think.
I do love the absurd, insane place where this gag went. Like, this is even better than Boimler and Rutherford because Captain Freeman's so uncomfortable in the scene. And she's like, I don't know why I'm doing this. And then we're all like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, and then what made me laugh the most is when it's like, it's not working. When they got Kokor has the wig on. He's like, why am I wearing this itchy hair hat? You know, like the wig, like it confuses him and pisses him off, it sounds like. And then when Freeman turns to Rutherford and she's like, Lieutenant, what am I supposed to do? It's like she like kept the accent when she's asking Rutherford for help. And I just like, I don't know. That just like cracked me up. It's like she's actually trying to do this like ridiculous, stupid thing. And then, of course, it doesn't work. And of course, this guy's pissed off and is trying to get in a fight with Shax. And of course, Freeman is angry at these dumbass lieutenants.
And then the best part, the pièce de résistance on that scene is when they're like, now try saying that in a southern accent. He gets infuriated because he's like, I'm from the south. He's like, that is,
yeah, he's from accent. South Chownoth. So
that is a southern accent, and I just, that's when I was just like, I lost it. It was so funny.
And he looks cool, like when he's fighting he Shax cool. And stuff. Like another advantage of the show being animation is, you know, they can make the aliens like a bit more aliens. But like, did you notice his feet? Like he doesn't have like any shoes on. Like he doesn't fit in, his feet don't fit into human shoes. He just has like these ripped pants when he's in the Mark Twain cosplay, and then you got like these really alien looking like bear type feet.
I still can't stop laughing, Captain Freeman, like shocked. Like kind of a belly. Like, oh my god, I love this show so much.
Were you also shocked when Kokor ate little bony? I thought that was hilarious. That made me. It was kind of obvious, like something was about to happen. Like, oh, they made like this big deal about like this tree, and then this guy is going to come ruin the tree or whatever. But the execution of it was pretty funny, and that's all he needed. Like he's like, oh, that sated my appetite. Go ahead, scan saying, the nebula.
They had just finished saying that it was like their child. And then he just eats it.
And then he washed it down with their mist.
That's right. It's so awful. It's so, he just like eats it. They were the whole thing with the boiler. Sorry, I'm laughing again. Like I'm losing it again because the whole thing was centered around this bonsai tree. Like that's how it all started. Is like, who's gonna water it? They came up with the odd and even stardate solution.
He solved their. I guess they had solved their problem, but if they hadn't worked it out, I guess he was gonna come eat this tree. So it wasn't gonna be a long term problem, one way or the other.
I just love it. Lower Decks, this is probably one of the best the best gags and episodes. Wow.
Yeah, it was good. And, you know, like, I wasn't, it wasn't quite what I was expecting. So I almost thought, like, the Mark Twain thing was going to work. And I was just going to be like, this is so silly. But, like, no, like, when, like, it didn't work, yeah. I was like, oh. And then, like, this dude eats the tree. I'm like, okay, that's pretty good. The episode ends with them kind of comparing notes. So, like, the girls are talking about the girl trip. The boys are talking about dressing up as Mark Twain and having their bonsai tree devoured. You have the picture of Erica swinging her husband across the threshold. And
that's awesome.
Boimler jealous about when he's like, oh, why would I be jealous about going to a cool secret pirate planet that no one ever gets to see? And then we end with the Mozart thing. Now, like, Mozart spoke German. Like, when they're speaking to each other, they're not, like, did you ever see the movie Amadeus? 1984.
I love that movie. I've seen it a lot of times.
Remind me, who played Mozart in that? Who was the lead?
His name, I believe, is Tom Hulce, if I'm not mistaken. Let me just...
Okay, he was really good though.
Yeah, he's.
But
really
he kind of talked like this.
But
like,
F. Murray Abraham's in that movie. Did you know?
Yeah,
that?
Yeah, another Star Trek connection. Ruafu. Yeah. That's widely considered the greatest Star Trek villain of all Star Trek movies. Right, as Ruafu from Star Trek Insurrection.
Right,
is the number one favorite in the fandom.
Yep, I was right. Tom Hulce.
In real life, Mozart wouldn't have been like, yes, shall we tickle the ivories? He would have been like all, you know, like German, like however you say that in
That's
German.
True. But I do think that, like, if I'm not mistaken, Tom Hulce in that movie, he's British. So he did, like, I think this is more of a reference to Amadeus than it is to Mozart. And also, like, I think it's funny because... In general, like in every movie, whenever you have someone like foreign, it doesn't matter. Like if an English actor is playing them, they just do an English accent. They don't they don't really change their accent. So I think
Works, you know, like if you're playing like a bunch of like Roman dudes in the Roman Empire. And, it's, you know, like, English, obviously you should be speaking Latin, but like if you're not going to do Latin, like, OK, do it in like an English accent. Don't be out there. Don't be out there in a Mark Twain accent talking about, you know, like the Roman Empire and like a Julius Caesar and Mark Antony.
By the way, Father, how often do you think about the Roman Empire?
It's funny because a woman did ask me that recently, and I told her I think thrice out of 48 hours, like three times out of 48 hours, I think about the Roman Empire.
That's hilarious. What did she say?
She was like, that's insane. Like, apparently, like, most dudes think about the Roman Empire a lot. And I was like, oh, I have no idea. It was, like, right before, like, that went viral. This was just, like, a week ago or so.
That's so funny. I hardly ever think of the Roman Empire. However, I do think of the Takan Empire often.
Well, I think about the Takan Empire every 18 minutes. So I was actually about to think about it in about 31 more seconds. I was going to think about the Takan Empire. We're moving a little ahead of schedule. So with that being said, let me just ask you, Sohel, do you have any final thoughts on this episode you'd like to share before we go into the Gornegg section of the show?
I think I'm going to watch this episode a lot more times before the next one comes out. You know, it was such a fun episode. The biggest thing about it for me is the Orion lore, you know, like getting more of that Orion, you know.
Like they gave us more, a lot
of Orion and a lot to think about. Like there's so much there that like now I feel like, oh, we're going to see a lot more interesting kind of like fan fiction and then maybe even like novels and stuff. By the way, have we seen in Beta Canon Orion? Like, have we gone there in Beta Canon? Do you know of any?
I'm sure. There's so many Trek novels and comics and games and someone's been there. I couldn't tell you about it, but I'm sure it's happened.
But as far as I'm very intrigued. I continue to be intrigued with the mystery box, if you will. Of this season overall, every season of Lower Decks just like gets better and better, but also I'm getting kind of sad because Lower Decks just makes me so happy, like, you know, we're living in tough times and this show just makes me crack up and I love that. Well, so this episode,
I'm sorry
what's that?
I'm sorry to rain on the parade, Sohel, but I got some sad news. Next week, we'll be halfway done with Lower Decks Season 4. Episode 5 is the halfway point.
That is sad news. I am bummed about it.
You know what else I was thinking about? Is I think, like, I want to get, like, a lot of seasons of Lower Decks, but I think best case scenario, it runs for 7 seasons. And that probably truly is best case scenario. Like, I don't know if it should, you know, drag on forever. But if it is only going to be 7 seasons, then we're like halfway done with the show at this point. And it might be less than 7, so we might be over halfway done with the show, but we know we're at least getting season 5. We know that for sure.
If I had to guess, I think the show's going to end when there's 7 Lower Decker characters on that we're like familiar with on a regular basis. And then they won't be Lower Deckers anymore. And so that's how the show kind of will naturally end. And I think that could be done in the next couple of 7 seasons. If it gets 7 seasons, that's a win for me. I don't know why I'm so attached to that 7, 7 season number as being like a complete series,
Only 3 Star Trek shows did 7 seasons out of.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, that's true. But in all honesty, like, nowadays I'm not so much attached to how long the seasons are, but like telling the story that the creators want to tell, like whatever, however long that takes. So if like Mike McMahon has like an end, an ending in mind already, and he gets to tell that story, I'll be satisfied, whether that's 5 seasons, 7 seasons, or 20 seasons, however long it is, that's kind of like where I would like it to go. It breaks my heart if Discovery's being, not being able to finish its story, but I think they did give them the budget to kind of like
created an ending for the show.
Yeah, they created an ending and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I like, because Star Trek kind of, since TNG, there's an expectation of a great ending. Like we never really TNG had an awesome ending, all good things, people still like talk about that episode. It's like, Kevin Feige based so much of his things off of that. Yeah. And
we taught the MCU how to do Endgame.
Yeah, and then what DS9 did, it's like insane. It's like it took Star Trek endings to a whole new level. Even as much as I love TNG, I can't deny that DS9, did something
that way... 10 episode arc to end. Yeah, it was so unprecedented. So
yeah, unprecedented. I can't wait till we start talking about that show. But I know y'all have already talked about it here. I'm talking about it on the other, Starfleet. So hail. But yeah, so that's like kind of like this kind of like expectation that I have is that like Star Trek always gives us a pretty decent ending. Like Voyager, I haven't seen the ending yet. I mean, I've seen it, but I don't have
You probably got I've to seen it and slept through it.
No. I've seen it in
the
past.
Oh, no, you did. Yeah, because you skipped ahead.
I've just watched it.
You have seen it.
But it's like Enterprise. I had watched the last episode of Enterprise, and I was like, oh, this is the coolest thing ever. I didn't understand the context until I watched the series, and I was like, oh, I'm mad. And I understood why Enterprise fans got mad. That was like the ending that they chose to do. So endings are important to me. I love Return of the Jedi. I love endings. So as long as the show gets to end in the way that Mike McMahon and his team want it to, I'm happy. I my secret wish is that it could be like a Simpsons or like a Family Guy and go on for like 20 seasons, that would not be a thing, but like maybe, I think Mike McMahon's so talented. Maybe there's other stories he wants to tell. And if that's the case, I fully support him and want to see him do that. Cause he's such a, Pablo, I think of him, I was always saying like, I think we need a Pablo Hidalgo from Star Wars, right? Like the kind of like creative centerpiece of the Star Wars franchise in this modern era, right? I think Mike McMahon's that person for Star Trek.
Hopefully he sticks around with the franchise, because I think he has a lot to contribute. In the live audience, I see Jill47 is also saying, as much as she loves this new pair and trio, she's yearning to see Rutherford and Tindy hang out and Mariner with Boimes. And I guess for my final thoughts on the episode, we'll go into the Gornegg section in just a second, but I guess I kind of agree with that. We have not gotten a ton of Mariner and Boimler together. They had like that moment in the corridor on Voyager when she's like, oh, don't worry about me, go save them, and I'm the one who asked for your promotion. And if they had some time together, in the crossover we got recently on Strange New Worlds, but I think that they'll give us some more screen time of the two of them in season 4. And I definitely think we're gonna get some big Tindy and Rutherford stuff. I know in the Ferengi episode it looks like they might go to like a Vegas style like wedding shack and get married or something, so maybe this ain't the only wedding episode we'll have. I don't necessarily know if I want to see like Tindy and, I know I want them in a relationship, I don't know if I want them to like get married in a few episodes, but anything that will kind of like the like that moment when in on the promenade when Kira's like, well, why don't you just kiss me right now? And Odo's like, well, why don't I? And then like they finally embrace, you know, if we can get like that moment, then I'm all for it. So whatever we got to do to get there.
It's building. It seems like that's where it's going. Like, I feel like we're going to get a moment. If we get a moment, it'll be very satisfying. By the way, thank you to my friend watching text messaging. Pablo Hidalgo is involved with Star Wars. That is a person involved with Star Wars. But who I meant was Dave Filoni. Like, I think that, like,
oh, okay.
Mike McMahon is more like Dave
Filoni. That makes a bit more sense.
Thank you. Sorry, Dave Filoni, for completely forgetting who you are.
I remember the first time I ever saw Dave Filoni. I was like, look at this nerd walking around like some Indiana Jones type hat. Wow. Like, this guy ain't going to last. Man, I was an idiot for saying that.
No, he's fantastic. And I feel like Mike McMahon gets Star Trek. I mean, he's got the humor lens, but he gets Star Trek. Like, he really loves it.
Well, you know, they wanted to bring him on as a writer in Discovery Season 1, and he turned it down. He's like, I can't do like a serious, like live action Star Trek show in the 23rd century. Like, that's, I'm not the guy for that.
Wow. Okay. Well, I love what he's doing.
He tells a story where, like, his agent, like, couldn't believe him because he is such a Star Trek fan. His agent was like, so let me get this straight. You're going to turn down Star Trek. I need you to say that to me. Say, I, Mike McMahon, am going to turn down Star Trek because otherwise I don't believe it as your agent. I can't believe that. But the franchise finally got him, and hopefully he sticks around.
And you know what? I love that. I love hearing that because, you know, Mike McMahon is the person who brought Star Trek animation back, and we're celebrating the 50th of Star Trek animation. And so, yeah, I love that he's 100% devoted to this cause. So, yeah, it's very cool.
Let's go to the Gorn Egg section of the show, where I like to go over the
I love this section.
The Easter eggs and jokes and continuity connections that I thought were worth mentioning. But there's not really a ton worth mentioning, at least not in the beginning with that plunder sorting room. You know, there's like a lot of what we would call props and live action being tossed around, you know, but there's like the Vulcan Lerpra and the Klingon Batleth, and there's a TOS phaser that Joel and I were talking about at the beginning of the show, but it's all things I think we've seen in Lower Decks before. However, on Orion, when they finally get to the planet, there's some fun stuff there. We see those bouncers.
The bodyguard, like bouncers,
They have, like, the bolts in their head, like the Orions and Enterprise. And then the episode even opened talking about, like, oh, yeah, you can get, like, these gnarly metal implants in your head. And that episode of Enterprise Bound, we saw the showgirls, the Orion showgirls. And Mariner says a captain would get taken out by some Orion showgirls, you know, when she was questioning, like, the Vulcan, or I'm sorry, the Orion pheromones. But yeah, that was in the episode Bound. And then another Enterprise shout out in this episode is when T'Len talks about Nayal and says that he is aesthetically pleasing to Mariner. Aesthetically pleasing, those were the words T'Pol used to describe that beautiful nebula in the Enterprise episode Fusion before she's assaulted by the weird Vulcan who's
creepy
part of like
Vulcan,
that hippie cult. Yeah. Now that sequence also contributes to why I hate jazz music, like Captain Shaw in Star Trek Picard.
Fascinating.
So, it's like during that weird like nightmare assault sequence, there's this horrific jazz song that plays over it, and I hate it.
Shit.
But I'm not a fan of jazz music. And Sohail, you were asking about the Raven type ship.
I love. Did you just call me DeSohail?
No, but I will if you want me to.
Yeah, I don't mind it at all. I was like, oh,
instead
I just
of Starfleet,
me...
Sohail, you are DeSohail. And then DeSohail, we have the Raven type ship. It is the same class as the USS Raven in Star Trek Voyager that Seven of Nine was on as a little kid. Annika
and
Hansen
there's even
with her
drawings
parents.
On it.
Yeah, it's a little kid, Seven of Nine, when she was Annika. She put up her little crayon drawings, too, and they got, like, the interior
what?
Of the ship to look the
That's
same.
That's so cute.
Very well
nice
done.
Nice reference.
And then in the B story, you know, we have all that Mark Twain silliness. Well, this ain't Star Trek's first dance with Samuel Clemens. He appeared in the flesh. The Enterprise D crew went back in time and met him and even brought him to the Enterprise in Time Zero Parts 1 and 2.
That's right. Do you know Seven of Nine's parents' names? Joel's asking in the audience.
That's an inside joke because it was a trivia question. But yes, they are and I already forgot the mother. I don't know. Was it like Naomi or something like that? Magnus was the weird one. But And then there is Erica Magnus. Thank you.
Oh, interesting.
There's another TNG reference. The alien captain Kokor, the Chowdnoth, same species as Esok or Esok.
Shout out to Jill, who I think was the first person who like caught it in my sphere.
Yes, I heard her explain it to you on the Text Trek First Reaction stream.
That's right.
Thursday. Right. People can tune into every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Central. Our friend Rachel is over there with some really cool, like Braxton's a regular over there. You, Starfleet Sohel, are frequently there. So it's a great crowd. People should check that out. If you like what we do on Fridays, you'll like what we do on Thursdays. It's much less structured. It's much less mean. just trying to, regurgitate like the actual events of the episode, and we're just people talking about what they like to one another. So please check that out. And yes, Jill, I think he does have shoes on.
I like the way he looks in Lower Decks a little more, but I mean, I think he looks just like way radder in Lower Decks.
He's so extreme though. It's just, yeah, he's a great character for animation. Yeah. So great use of the universe there. And it was also like a weird thing. Like the thing we know about that species is they get hangry. So it's funny, like eating the bonsai is what like got them to calm down. Cause like the fear in that episode is like, I have to eat meat. And if I don't eat meat, I will die. And if I go too long without meat, I will go insane and try to eat all of you. And they're like, well, we should probably figure out a way to get out of here before that happens. So
it is pretty funny.
But that's all I got on the Gorn eggs. Y'all heard Sohel and I talk about this episode for an hour and a half. So I'd love to hear what everyone else thought about it. Please comment on YouTube. Reply to my tweets on Twitter. I'm on Instagram and I'm on Blue Sky. I haven't started posting there yet. I really need to get on the ball with that. I know I say that every week. So hopefully this weekend I can get that going. I have started putting some stuff on Instagram. I need to do more.
I have an exclusive for the Text Trek audience because I just checked my Blue Sky and I have two new invites. So if there's anyone in the Text Trek audience that needs an invite, just let me know in the chat. Now. And then just don't at me because then people get crazy. But like just let me know what your handle is on Twitter and I'll
comment on here and we'll let Sohel know and we'll let you know if they're still.
I'm totally giving codes. So like anyone needs codes, I got it for you.
But we did get some subspace transmissions about last week's episode in the Cradle of Vexilon. So good time for two or three here. But on Star Trek Twitter, Admiral Funnest Frontier was saying, loved it. And Steven with a PH said, it was just okay. Anything would have a hard time following the high bar that the first two episodes set for the season. Can't wait for the next episode, though. On YouTube, Opinions No One Cares About said, because we had Dirk voiced by Phil LaMarr last week, said, I do love Phil LaMarr's voice work, but I'll always remember him for the first season of Mad TV. He was the UPS guy. Who like danced around and talked about how fast UPS was about delivering things. And Opinions also said that he loved the Twin Peaksy floor design. So
same cool opinions, same.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you so much for stopping to chat Star Trek with us, Starfleet Sohel. Always great to see you. And
thanks for having me.
I hope everyone else enjoyed the show. I hope folks can come back next week for that episode 5 deep dive discussion. Thank you, Text Trek patrons. That includes you, Starfleet Sohel, but also Cake is Eternal, Crazy Dutchie, Joanne Robertson, John Dot, Geek Filter, Earl Grey Trekkie, Quarks Bar, Benginium, Stephanie Durantes, Matthew Averett, Braxton, Chuck A, and our anonymous supporters. Hashtag Save Star Trek Prodigy. Let's find that show a home. I'll see y'all next week. And until then, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Listen to the Text Trek podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or at text-trek.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/text-trek. And follow Fathery on Twitter at TXTrek. Please support us by liking our videos and subscribing to our channel on YouTube. Thank you and take care.